Welcome to the Freedom Report, broadcasting from Alexandria, Virginia. Welcome to the Freedom Report. I'm your host, Austin Peterson. Who's Austin Peterson?
Liberty champion Austin Peterson, this Justin Bieber lookalike, and a powerful advocate for liberty.
Who's Austin Peterson? I'm an American. I love life, liberty, and family, but I'm not a conservative. I'm a hardcore libertarian. What am I doing here? I'm trying to restore the republic. The Libertarian Republic is a website aimed at furthering the ideas of economic freedom and personal liberty. I don't really care about parties. All I care about are ideas. And the one idea I care the most about? Freedom! That's right, pure freedom on the Freedom Report podcast.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the Freedom Report. Your host, Austin Peterson here. Ian, welcome back to the show.
Good to be here.
Today's Monday, May the 19th, and today, two white boys are going to be checking their privilege. We are two white men with opinions here talking today about our privilege because apparently we are no longer racist because Obama's not running for president. It's going to be Hillary, so it's time for us to check our privilege as males.
Right.
So the race wars are over, and now we're going to have gender wars. Isn't that about what's going on right now, Ian?
Right. Now we need to worry about the fact that we're not qualified to speak about gender issues.
Right. We had no right to talk about race issues for the last, you know, 6-7 years. Now we will have no right to talk about gender issues now that Hillary Clinton's running for president.
Of course, because someone is male, you can infer really everything you need to know about their life experience from that fact and just dismiss their arguments.
Absolutely. Remember when we talked about the Colbert Report, where there was the issue of Suey Park, who was the Asian girl, the ultra-commie liberal who was saying that we needed to cancel Colbert. She was the hashtag activist who said we needed to cancel Colbert. And she had this epic interview with the Huffington Post where she said, as a white man, you really can't say that you have, you can't
right.
have an opinion on
he
this.
He tried to disagree with her, and she said, no, you don't understand. We're not here to have a discussion. You're not qualified to have any opinion on this subject. I'm here to make pronouncements, and you must bow and grovel before me.
Right.
And to our encouragement, the Huffington Post hosts, instead of doing what liberals are supposed to do and groveling, were like, no, we're getting a little bit tired of this. I think we're qualified to have an opinion, even though you say we're not.
Exactly. Thanks, Milan. Anyways, one man says he checked his privilege and it's just fine. This is from Fox News Insider. In a column, lawyer Kurt Schlichter responded to the latest leftist insanity, writing in part, liberals have a new word for what normal people call success. They call it privilege. As if a happy, prosperous life is the result of some magic process related to where your great-great-great-grandfather came from. It's the latest leftist argument tactic, which means it is a tactic designed to prevent any argument and to beat you into rhetorical submission. Conservatives don't play their game. He says, it's easy to see that this notion that accomplishment comes not from hard work, but from some mysterious force operating out there in the ether. It's essential to liberal thought to excuse the dole-devouring layabouts who form so much of the Democratic voting base. It is critical that they undermine the achievements of those who support themselves. We can't have the American people thinking that hard work leads to success. People might start asking why liberal constituencies just don't work harder instead of demanding more money from those who actually produce something. The check your privilege meme is the newest trump card du jour on college campuses and other domains of progressive tyranny, he says. It morphed into existence from the you racist wolf cry that is now so discredited that it produces little but snickers among liberal fellow travelers. After all, if everyone is racist, and to the progressives, everyone is but themselves, then no one is really racist, and it's kind of hard to take seriously being called racist by adherents of a political party that made a KKK Kliegel its Senate Majority Leader. Ooh, Schlichter for the win. What do you think of that one, Ian?
Oh, I don't know if that was a fair blow. I think we can just discredit the argument on its own merits. Which it doesn't have any. We can just point out that you can infer everything you need to know about someone's background based on their appearance. They could be a poor coal miner from West Virginia. They could be the son of impoverished East European refugees. But you say, because of your skin color, because of your sex, I'm dismissing your argument. It's also logically fallacious to dismiss someone's argument because of what you do know about their background. The argument has to be addressed on its own merits.
Well, the thing is that even if someone is a racist, let's say they were a racist, right? Does that mean that they're wrong? You know, they may have an opinion on something, but if someone is a racist, just because they're a racist doesn't mean their opinion on something else is wrong. It makes it easier to discredit someone. So like Cliven Bundy is a perfect example.
Sure. I mean, the left's opinion of a racist is not just Cliven Bundy, which right. is what most people would say was a racist statement, the mm-hmm. statement Cliven Bundy made, but mm-hmm. pretty much anyone who disagrees with them on any issues that are within 6 degrees of race mm-hmm. or sex or, mm-hmm. or any other issue, gay rights.
Right, and if you think that these people don't just throw these words about in a meaningless fashion, one of the best videos that you can look at to see how the left uses these tactics so casually is an Occupy Wall Street video. There was a man by the name of Vladimir Jafra, who we actually, when I was working at Fox on Freedom Watch, we had Vladimir on the show, former Soviet Union expat, who he came to the United States and he fled communism, coming to the United States as a Russian Jew. And he went to Occupy Wall Street and interviewed the Occupy Wall Street socialists debating monetary policy. Well, he was debating fiscal policy as well. He was talking about, basically, he was talking about North Korea, you know, as a socialist paradise. And people were saying, these Occupy Wall Street socialists, at the end of the debate, once they had lost the debate, this guy goes, "What are you, a racist man?" And it's just like, what? What the hell? Where did that even come from? It came out of nowhere because the tactic is that when the left is losing an argument, they want to cry racist.
Use that hammer in any situation to shut down debate.
The hammer and sickle.
Now, typically when that's happened, conservatives have groveled and said, "No, please don't call me mean names. I bow before you. I conform to your narrative.
I'll check my privilege."
And we're now seeing lots of conservatives start to question the left's privilege narrative. Mm-hmm. And that's encouraging, but I would warn conservatives, let's not make it too little too late. Schlichter, in an interview Schlichter, in an interview we just watched with him, dismissed these privilege accusations as coming from sort of ponytailed hippie grad students. Mm-hmm. And that is not the source of these accusations. The source of these accusations is their Marxist professors, who constitute a powerful and influential intellectual elite. Mm-hmm. So we can't just dismiss this as a joke. We need to aggressively and seriously intellectually destroy it.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
We can't just laugh it off or it's going to bulldoze us.
Right. And some people might accuse you of hyperbole for saying that there are Marxist professors.
Let's talk about
But let's talk about this. I'll give you a perfect example, not of Marxist professors, but of Marxists in our government and people who run for public office openly as socialists and communists. And the one great example is if you're in Washington, D.C. and you're listening to this podcast, you've probably driven around the city and seeing those green signs all over the city. There's a man who's running for city council in Washington, D.C. by the name of Eugene Puryear, P-U-R-Y-E-A-R. Eugene Puryear. And this guy actually is someone that I debated once on Russia Today in a debate, anarchism versus socialism versus libertarianism, and I played the libertarian. And Eugene Puryear is someone who in that debate, which you can see actually on the Libertarian Republic website, anarchist debate, Eugene Puryear came out as an open communist, saying that his socialistic philosophy was only a means to an end, which is a communist society. So if you don't believe that there are people who are openly Marxist professors, which is probably easier to believe, or that there are open Marxists that are actually government officials or also people who run for office on the platform of the communist manifesto, then you guys need to wake up because they are all around us right now. And one of the things that people say is that they talk about McCarthyism. But you know what? As nutty as McCarthy was, he was also right. There were communists in our government. And so now that the left has taken over the mainstream of our academic establishment and taken so many positions in government, they've marginalized those who disagree with them. And they do that by using the racist epithet. And they also now are using the epithet of "check your privilege, you white racist males, shut the hell up."
We posted a quote from Dinesh D'Souza recently. He says there's probably more Marxists in our elite universities in the United States on the faculties at elite universities than in all of Russia and Eastern Europe. And most of our readers responded that they had openly Marxist professors. Mm-hmm. Ted Cruz has talked about dealing with openly Marxist professors in his time at Yale. Mm-hmm. And this is astounding for two reasons. One, because in the 20th century, Marxists murdered 2/3 of everyone killed by governments. Mm-hmm. and also because Marxists were the leader of America's primary enemy in the world decades ago. It is as if in the 60s and 70s it was commonplace to have openly Nazi professors at universities around the country. Mm-hmm. It should be astounding for both of those reasons.
Right.
Now, you talked about people being afraid of, you know, being called McCarthyists and so on, and people pointing to the Red Scare. I really think the best way for conservatives to approach this issue and sidestep those accusations is to use the word Marxist rather than communist.
Right.
Even if someone calls themselves a communist, if you then point out they're a communist, you sound silly.
That's true.
But Marxist is what they are. They derive their ideas from Karl Marx. And that's usually the label these professors use.
Well, and I also think it's a bit silly and perhaps hyperbolic for us to compare Nazis and Marxists, because Marxists are way worse than Nazis ever were, because the Nazis got their ass handed to them in a high hat after 10 or 11 years, and their empire was over. But the Soviets lasted for well over 50 years, and they killed way more people. You know, how many people did the Nazis end up killing? What, 8 to 10 million? But then the Marxists killed how many?
Marxists killed 2/3 of everyone, technically from 1900 to 1987, killed by governments. And the reason they did that is because Marxist controlled so many governments around the world.
Which is why I don't like comparing Nazis to Marxists, because Nazis were a blip on the map compared to Marxism, which still is a murderous philosophy that lives today.
I make that comparison because we recognize that Nazism is an evil, mass-murdering ideology.
Right.
Marxism necessarily leads to that because it demands equal results from everyone. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where it ties into this privilege narrative. Mm-hmm. Marxism has always assumed unequal results are proof of unequal opportunity. You're doing better than me. Mm-hmm. You've cheated somehow.
Right.
That's where this narrative comes from. And we know it's being influential. If you look at, I point to several times on this podcast, the 2013 State of the First Amendment survey. The older you are, actually, the more likely you are to value the First Amendment in the United States. We talk a lot about how millennials are becoming more libertarian, but progressive millennials are more leftists. Mm-hmm. So if you ask people, does the First Amendment go too far in protecting our rights? Mm-hmm. 47% of people 18 to 30 say yes, 44% of people 31 to 45, 24% of people 46 to 60, and 23% of people over 60. So I think we're seeing a lot of the left's influence on people who are younger, I think largely through their experience in college.
All right, so let's
it's not a joke.
But all right, it's not a joke. Why? But here's the thing: I want to talk about the privileged narrative from a perspective of whether or not the left really is just they don't value achievement. Do you know what I mean? Like, let's take an example out of the real world. So Jill Abramson, who was the editor-in-chief of the New York Times recently, was pushed out by, fired, basically. And she's sort of claiming, or her camp is claiming, that this was because she had demanded equal pay as the man who worked, who was the editor-in-chief before her. And so now it's become a narrative of, well, doesn't this woman deserve equal pay because she had the same job? And the problem is that what liberals and Marxists and communists don't understand is that you don't deserve equal pay because of your gender. You deserve the pay that you get based on your merit, based on what kind of quality of work that you do. And everyone knows that the New York Times are losing readers. They're bleeding readers all over the place because they're having a harder time competing with digital. You know, they've got an enormous building in the middle of Manhattan, right in Times Square, which is, I'm sure, has an enormous overhead. Whereas someone like you and I, we work out of our, the library in my house. And the people who are listening to this, you got to understand, you know, we're a, you know, $10,000 a month institution here. And we can compete with the New York Times, theoretically, because online we can, our content can compete with them. That's real egalitarianism. But when it comes to merit, when it comes to an actual meritocracy, why do you think it is that liberals reject that? Do you think it's because they worry that females actually aren't as strong as males, and so they can't compete, and so that we have to have this privilege narrative because
are right to say, well, women who choose to stay at home, that's a strength too. It's a different sort of strength. It's not a less valuable thing. I think that fundamentally, the tradition of the Marxist left has always been opposed to difference and in favor of uniformity. I think that's what this hatred is more fundamentally than hating success. So Marx says, I want to abolish the family, and the family will disappear as a matter of course when its complement, capitalism, vanishes. Mm-hmm. So the Marxist assumption has always been that men and women will produce equal results everywhere mm-hmm. by default. We don't have natural differences. So we just need to remove this structure of male privilege mm-hmm. and then men and women will be everywhere the same. Mm-hmm. So anytime we see men and women making different choices, that's proof of this system of privilege. Mm-hmm. And we need to defensively break it down.
So hilarious story we just recently published online. It was a story about this anarchist conference that devolved into chaos. And it was a story about this conference at the University of Pittsburgh, I believe, where these anarchists got together and they were protesting each other. And it was funny because they were...
I believe it was a Marxist anarchist.
Marxist anarchist. Yeah. Of course it was, yes. So, but the funny thing about the story was, is that, you know, out of nowhere, all of a sudden, you know, someone yells, "You are privileging white males," you know, and it was about sexual assault or something like that. And it was like, where did this white male privilege idea come from? You know, like, the thing is that if you don't... The trope is that, you know, this white males control everything and having power. But if you're from Missouri, like me, in Peculiar Missouri, you wouldn't think that there was any white privilege, because there's a lot of poor white people here in the United States. The Onion did a fantastic article recently, too, where they parodied this. And they said white male wastes his privilege on job at Best Buy. You know, like, think about
right,
all...
I saw that.
Wasn't that brilliant, you
I
know?
Think that what was happening at this meeting was mm-hmm. that the speakers were trying to talk about some sort of economic issue that was of interest to them, mm-hmm. and these protesters demanded that, no, our meeting needs to be only about refuting male privilege. Mm-hmm. And as you've indicated, you know, all the racists are going to become sexist when mm-hmm. Hillary Clinton runs for president. The privilege narrative really underpins and is now the basis of the modern establishment left. Just this morning, I was listening to some Democrats' campaign ad, and he was making it all about equal pay for men and women, mm-hmm. i.e., you know, using the law to force equal outcomes when people want to make different choices. Mm-hmm. So that is the base on which the establishment left is now standing.
It's what is, to me, I think it's just an issue of telling someone to shut up. That's really what it is. It's like, shut up, you don't have an opinion.
Right.
And, you know, let's talk about this from a perspective of the liberty movement, because, you know, this is something that's, you know, if you're a libertarian and you call yourself a libertarian, you're listening to this podcast, you're probably familiar with Kathy Reisenwitz. She's been a frequent guest of the Freedom Report. We have her on this podcast to discuss these issues, because I think it's important to engage with the feminist community, specifically the feminist libertarian community, because they while I think that a majority of their ideas are just backwards and based on awkward leftist concepts that don't really have any basis in the fundamental political debate, I think that they do have some strong ideas, some ideas that are good ideas, and these are ideas that are the sort of the diamonds in the rough. One of those issues was the issue of over-the-counter birth control that Kathy Reisenwitz brought up, that I thought was an excellent idea to talk about in Republican and Libertarian and conservative circles, because, you know, if we're going to have this debate over, if we're going to have this debate about privilege or something like that, what we need to be able to do if we're going to fight Hillary Clinton is we've got to be able to switch the terms of the debate to an issue such as over-the-counter birth control as a means to deflect the criticisms of us being white males. So, for example, let's say that we're having a debate with a Marxist or communist or socialist or a feminist or whatever, and she says, well, you need to check your white male privilege. And I said, well, you know, I checked my white male privilege and it seems to be doing fine. However, one of the issues that I think is really important for us as Republicans, as libertarians, as conservatives, is to discuss the issue of over-the-counter birth control. And what you do is, because the whole point of telling someone to check their privilege is to take the moral high ground, right, Ian? If
right.
we as libertarians come at them from the left with an issue such as over-the-counter birth control as a means of female empowerment and ending the war on drugs, or child care.
I liked Reisenwitz's piece about child care.
Bring that, just tell that story.
She talked about how regulations make daycare more expensive, mm-hmm. and I think that repealing those regulations is important because really what they represent is the government taking for itself the role of the family.
Right.
Now, also, though,
you can't say
that, though,
as a concern, because the thing is that you're not taking the moral high ground from the left using that argument, Ian. The reason that you get the moral high ground on that argument is because...
I'm emphasizing an area of congruence. It's important to recruit people from across the political spectrum, but it's also important to have libertarian congruence.
Well,
we need to work together on the areas where we agree.
But from a tactical standpoint, Ian, you shouldn't use the conservative talking point. The reason why that you have congruence there, you shouldn't start out in a debate with the
argument. Political philosophy is conservative. I'm going to let Kathy Reisenwitz make that argument to whatever liberals are willing to listen to.
But here's the thing: the point is that if you're in a debate with a Marxist and they take the moral high ground, you've got to snatch it away from them and using the cloak of liberalism. And here's the thing. So here's the thing. So the argument about whether, childcare argument is that poor mothers have to pay more for childcare than rich mothers, because rich mothers will use illegal immigrants, right? They'll hire illegal immigrants. They'll end up paying less for childcare than a poor working mom, because she has regulations.
And one of the reasons
illegal
immigrant providers are cheaper is because there are all these burdensome regulations and certifications that a regular childcare provider has to go through.
Right. So the rhetoric in that debate, to take it away from the Marxist, from the socialist, because the people who are listening to them who are like, oh, I agree, that's terrible, we should have early childhood education programs funded by the government. The way to take that away from them is to say, we think that there are too many regulations on childcare, and it's harming poor mothers to the benefit of rich mothers who get that. And that's how you do it. Because the conservatives will agree with you. They'll say, well, what was your argument? Go ahead.
Well, some conservatives were responding to that piece by saying, no, you shouldn't want to take your kids to daycare anyway. You should want to care for your kids yourself.
Yeah, need to be barefoot and pregnant at home, which is
in terms of
argument.
Personal preference, I think that makes sense. It's good to care for your kids. But I also think from a conservative standpoint, all these regulations that the government is imposing upon childcare represent the government appropriating for itself the role of the family.
And I think they heartlessly ignored the fact that, some working mothers are single mothers and do have to take care of it. And sometimes they're widows and they're not just necessarily choosing to not stay at home with their
kids.
I was
emphasizing a positive there, though. Let me make the criticism I was going to make. I think the reason a lot of progressives are emphasizing universal pre-K now is not a concern for poor people, but because they think this will be one more way in which the government can engineer people and engineer people into our sort of utopian society we'd like to see.
Right.
I think it's very important to listen to Hayek's warning. If you concede that equal results are the desired outcome, you really do need an omnipotent government to engineer that. So I think that's true of gender issues as well. We have to emphasize that people need to be free to make different choices. If we cede that an identical outcome is desirable, then there is no libertarian policy solution there.
Now, you said Hayek's solution. Like Hayek who? Hayek's explosives?
F.A. Hayek.
Who's this Hayek guy you mentioned, for people who don't know?
F.A. Hayek was a great economist. He wrote The Road to Serfdom, which is a fun little booklet that's popular among libertarians. And he was a strong critic of the left-wing notion of social justice. And he criticized the notion that we need to value identical results from everyone as our sort of optimal moral outcome.
Interesting. All right. Well, have you checked your privilege, you cisgendered white male scums? Thank you very much for listening to Freedom Report Podcast. We really appreciate you guys. If you like the show, then go to iTunes and leave us a good review and download us every single day. You can get us on Stitcher, the application Stitcher. And we want to know what you guys think. So send us an email. Go to thelibertarianrepublic.com. There's a send us a tip. You can send us an email and tell us what you think about the website. Are you having any problems? We had a new rollout about a month ago, and some people reported a few issues here and there. Any bug reports that you can send to us helps us improve, get better, so that we can send you great news every single day. Your home for economic freedom and personal liberty at thelibertarianrepublic.com.